Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the October 7th, 2014 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. I wondered if you'd please stand with me and while we say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Remind you that the emergency exits are in the front of the room to my left and in the back of the room to my right, and that I would ask people, including the legislators, to please silence their cell phones and other electronic devices. May we have the roll call, please?
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne? Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Ms. Robertson has asked to be excused. Mr. Robison? Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein has asked to be excused. Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera has also asked to be excused. Mr. Lane?
Here.
Nine members present.
We do have a quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We'll proceed to privilege of the floor. This is the opportunity for the public to speak to us. In order to do that, we do require that a blue card be filled out and passed up. The cards are on the back. The card indicates your willingness to abide by our rules. I'll read them. The rules are that I agree to a three-minute time limit. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would intend to incite a breach of peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. We do have a countdown clock to indicate the time remaining for someone speaking, at the end of which there will be an audible signal, and we ask the person to conclude and leave the microphone at that point. I think I've got one blue card coming. Thank you. We have Mr. Jerome Dennis. Mr. Dennis, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. I'm here to petition the legislature for a waiver of interest, penalties, and other fees associated with property taxes that I do have due. Article 1182 of the property tax law allows the legislature to waive this, not the finance department. My property taxes were late because of issues I had with the child support court, I guess is the best way to put it. Issue being was that because of the child support that was ordered and the magistrate not considering the tax consequences when he so ordered child support, I fell behind to the tune of about maybe $2,400 in taxes alone. The interest and penalties and all the other associated fees right now exceed well over $800, which is 2 months of heating oil for my house or 1 month of groceries. I could repair the steps on my house, the back roof of my house, or half of the main roof on my house. My request for waiver, it's late because of the child support, as I stated. The check I did mail was refused and returned to me pending this hearing. trying to apply for HEAP because of the heating oil situation is just too restrictive in my particular case because I don't have a heating oil supplier. I get kerosene from the local gas stations. And on top of that, Christmas is also coming, which is going to put an extreme burden on my family right now. As I said, I do have the check for all the past due taxes, but not enough to cover any of the interest, fees, or other associated penalties. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Dennis. Rick Snyder, what would be the proper procedure if a person wanted to appeal this?
Well, we don't have a procedure because in the statute that governs the collection of property taxes, as Mr. Dennis alluded to, that the finance director or the treasurer or the comptroller does not have the power to waive any interest, fees, or penalties. And we were involved in much correspondence back and forth with Mr. Dennis and his wife on this property, in that because there is no procedural way to waive these interest, fees, and taxes, they had to pay the full amount, and that's why his check was refused. And he made reference to a section of the law that does allow the county legislature on occasion to waive interest or penalties, and that's when I got Jonathan Wood involved, and as the county attorney, he opined that that didn't really apply in this instance because the only time that the legislature can get involved even to waive interest or penalties is when it's to the benefit of the county. And so how would that benefit the county if we would waive interest and penalties? And the law states in the court cases in which have been held since the section of the law was passed that in order to prove it's in the best interest of the county, it's usually in the cases when there have been storms, hurricanes, natural disasters of that sort, and they pass some form of sweeping legislation to take care of property owners who may have been affected due to a natural disaster. There's been court cases that have been cited that show if there was a Brownsfield incident, such as a case where the county was trying to take care of a particular piece of property, that they may get involved in waiving interest and penalties on a previous property owner. So these are cases that are of the extreme nature, but they're not ever based on purely just what we would call hardship. And so we were never able to really satisfy Mr. Dennis's claim to bring him anything even close to what he saw as satisfactory because he insisted that he didn't have to pay these interest and penalties. So the law does prescribe that he is allowed to come and speak to the legislators on this topic, and we welcome him to do so. I believe he was at the last meeting also. But once again, as treasurer or finance director of the county, I don't have the power or authority to do that, and the legislature does, but only in those extreme and rare instances where it would benefit the county.
Thank you. Joe, I wonder if you'd ask the county attorney to give us a brief memo on this and circulate it to the legislature and with a copy to Mr. Dennis. I would note that, in particular, these kind of issues would be in front of the Government Operations Committee. Thank you, Mr. Dennis.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I did copy Article 1182. I would like to present it.
Certainly. You're more than welcome to do that. Thank you.
Mike?
Sure. I still have one more person to speak.
On that subject,
I
wanted to suggest that it be referred to GO in any event.
Okay.
For discussion. Thank you.
And maybe John will want to report to that committee, John.
That's fine. No.
And Will?
Well, I was wondering if maybe this is appropriate to Dooley's suggestion, whether there's any mechanism for working out situations with people experiencing extreme financial hardship, you know, payment plans or whatever. If we have anything to offer, it would be the question.
Yes, we do. We do have installment plans that we do offer to people when they're delinquent, and they sign a two-year. They pay it off slowly over 2 years. They have to come up with 25% down, and those installment agreements, you know, are out there, and we, you know, have pretty much success with those.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Next card I have is Kevin Kelly.
Does this microphone work here?
Yeah. Hopefully, yeah. Okay, you may want to raise it up a little bit.
No, yeah, just pull it up or twist
this
it
is
up
fine.
Toward you.
I can hear you.
Anyways, I'm Kevin Kelly. I'm a local attorney here in Ithaca, and I'm also on the board for Opportunities, Alternatives, and Resources of Tompkins County. And I came to speak in support of our proposal to bring our staff back to where it was pre-recession. I started on the board there about 6 years ago, and we had to make tough cuts. We had to reduce the amount of money that we paid our staff, the amount of staff that we have. And, you know, we knew that going into a recession. I lost my job with a nonprofit, Prisoners Legal Services here. And those are just some of the tough decisions people have to make. But I work for a nonprofit here, Legal Assistance of Western New York, and we're seeing our funding increase coming out of the recession. And as you know, we make our efforts to save the county money based on the money that you give us and to make ourselves self-supporting. But at this point, you know, it's been a great stress on our staff. Our current staff has been putting up similar numbers to what we had prior to the recession, but it's not more people. It's just people working extra time and not getting compensated for it. And it's been a long time of us asking that of our staff. And I can tell you that OAR is really something that Tompkins County should be proud of. When I go to the State Bar Association, you know, I'm on the criminal justice section, and they look to Tompkins County as a leader in having faith in this model, in that it does help the community. It gives our criminal justice system more integrity here. And so, you know, in Broome County, for example, I met with the public defender over there. They're looking to have a model similar to ours, and other people are doing the same around the state. And so it's really something Tompkins County ought to be proud of. When I came here, I was a public defender in another area of the state where they didn't have anything like this. And I'm really impressed with the work that it does for our clients. I believe it benefits the county. I know we've spoken on other issues before, but at this point, I'd like to just share with you that, you know, the staff has been working very hard to get through the recession, and we really appreciate your consideration for our proposed staff increase. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Kevin. That's all the blue cards I seem to have tonight. We'll move on then to municipal officials. Privilege of the floor. I don't see any municipal officials tonight. So that moves us to legislators who would like to speak tonight. Will Burbank.
Thanks, Mike. I got my flu shot today. And for me, that's a big deal because I'm shot phobic. It is frequently a terrifying event. As you're probably aware, the health department used to do a lot of these, and now these are widely available everywhere. And a couple years ago, I got adventurous and decided to do this at the local drugstore, and it was a horrible experience. The very nice gentleman who was doing it was nervous, and he conveyed that into the needle, the pain. But today, I went down to Lifelong. Our health department was doing a clinic there. The people could not have been nicer, more professional. It was just an amazingly well-run operation, and the nurse who did it distracted me by asking me a question and then said, "You're done," and I was shocked. It was that painless. Go do it, and I really want to commend our health department for a job well done. That's it.
Thanks, Will. Anyone else? Carol Chalk.
Yeah, I'm just going to mention this now, although there's other spots in the agenda I could, to give us a chance to circulate this announcement about the comprehensive plan open houses. So as you know, the county comprehensive plan draft is now available for review. I want to remind people, then we can talk later under committee report about maybe what a plan is or is not. A comprehensive plan sets a sort of overarching goals for the county, but does not there are things we'd like to achieve, but we're not actually implementing any of them until they come to us then specifically. So as people hear comments from their neighbors or constituents, just keep that in mind. We do encourage people to come out and let us know, to look at the plan and to let us know their sense of this future direction. And the dates are listed here, which is why I wanted to mention it now so we'd have time to pass it around. The first of the public sessions is tomorrow at 11:30 to 1:30 at the library's Borg Warner Room. And then this show will travel throughout Enfield, Dryden, Danby, Lansing, and back to the Central Public Library. And those will be on October 8th at the library and in Enfield, October 14th at Dryden, October 16th in Danby, October 22nd in Lansing, October 23rd back at the library. So do people want me to read out? Do you think I need to read out for our viewers at home the actual times and places? Or I can tell you where you can get to them is on our website. Just search for Tompkins County Comprehensive Plan, and it will take you right there. And right. I stole that one from the wall downstairs, so have it come back around to me so I can put it back as we leave. Thank you.
Jim Dennis.
I passed mine. Thank you.
Oh, I thought you had your hand up. Sorry.
I did, but.
Anyone else like to speak tonight? All right. We'll move on. Tonight we have a special topical presentation. And it's going to be a report from our planning department on the Tompkins County Housing Fund. And Megan McDonald, who is a senior planner with us, is going to be doing that. Are we going to put down the screens?
Yes.
All right, we'll suspend while we put down the screens.
If I misspoke, Megan, you can correct my definition of a comprehensive plan.
Whenever you're ready. Could we get the lights dropped a little?
Good evening. Again, my name is Megan McDonald, and thank you for having me tonight. So I'm here to talk to you a little bit about the Tompkins County Housing Fund and update you on its progress. Especially given that we're currently in the final year of the original Memorandum of Understanding for the program, and the partners are working to determine its future right now, and you've got a resolution later on in your agenda about the county's commitment there. So just to give you a little background, the Housing Fund is a joint effort between Tompkins County, the City of Ithaca, and Cornell University. And so each of the partners these last 6 years has contributed funds. And then the program has two components, one of which assists for pre-development costs of affordable housing units. And the other part assists with land purchase costs, construction costs, other hard costs associated with developing affordable units that are affordable for the long term to low and moderate income families, people making 80% or less of area median income. And these units are meant to be affordable for 49 years or more. So tonight, I'm just going to briefly tell you a little bit about our housing affordability challenges and the impacts the fund has been having in the community. So it's probably not a surprise to anyone that housing affordability is a persistent and growing challenge in our community. It's hard to open a newspaper or turn on the radio without hearing about it or in the grocery store. And both through news stories, surveys such as those the planning department conducted as part of the comprehensive plan update process, surveys by the Office for the Aging, there are lists that various service providers keep of people asking for assistance with household expenses, all indicate that this is a challenge that is only increasing in our community. In terms of what we really mean about affordability, typically it's defined, housing is defined as affordable if a household pays no more than 30% of its income towards housing-related expenses. And as you can see in the county, over a third of our households are paying in excess of this amount towards their housing expenses. Locally, we've got the challenge of a large off-campus student population, which can often outcompete a moderate-income working family. If you think about a group of students being able to pool their financial resources and perhaps pay more for rent than a working family might be able to. Also, we've been seeing a lot of the new housing construction oriented towards the student market and out of the financial reach of many working families. Unfortunately, this is also a time where state and federal assistance for the development of affordable housing has been decreasing. At the same time, the competition for it has been increasing. And additionally, you'll see that in terms of our surrounding counties, our median income is not that much out of line in terms of any of our neighbors, but our housing prices really are. And so that's where we're seeing, you know, increasing numbers of in commuters traveling longer distances in search of affordable housing.
Are the students figured into that income number?
They are. The census doesn't distinguish them. So in terms of what's the housing fund actually doing to help with this challenge in our community? So to date, we've had over $1 million in housing fund awards drawn. So the city and the county each contribute $100,000 per year over 6 years, and Cornell University has been contributing $200,000 per year towards this fund. And then we have housing fund awards, typically two per year, and receive applications, and the committees made up of members of each of the organizations then determines who to award funds to and, you know, how that's going to be funded by the different partners. So to date, we've had 88 units built. We also have 119 additional units who have been awarded funds, and we expect to move forward towards construction. And as you can see, in terms of the amount of money the housing fund has contributed, this has really been helping developers of affordable housing units leverage the additional finances they need to make these projects possible. The market simply isn't providing enough affordable housing for our community. And so we're finding the various applicants are using the housing fund awards as a very visible demonstration, proof that a community is not only saying that they want these projects and that they need these affordable units, but is actually willing to commit some of its financial resources. And then they're using that in their applications for tax credits and to help leverage other funding from, and these are just kind of a sample of, you know, funds through NYSERDA, the Ithaca Urban Renewal Agency, the state, and others. And so those numbers might be a little hard to read, but that's over $18 million of leverage funds that have been awarded so far to projects that received housing fund awards. And so basically every $1 that the housing fund has contributed to projects to date has resulted in $5 in additional property values, increases in the community, over $22 in development costs spent in the community, and nearly $18 in additional leverage funds. So to give you a sense geographically of where housing fund supported units have been built in the county, you'll see that the majority have been in the town of Ithaca and the city of Ithaca. That is where we've had the largest affordability challenges, and also where there are a number of jobs where employees are seeking housing closer to their workplaces. This is resulting in real on-the-ground units. We've got families living in them. And also, many of these have been award-winning projects, receiving awards such as the Department of Energy's Housing Innovation Award and a Community Development Award from the Central New York Business Journal. In terms of each of the partners, to help you understand how it aligns with each of their goals, the Housing Fund is supporting Cornell goals in terms of its workforce housing strategy. Housing initiative, which is actually part of the memorandum of understanding for the housing fund. So this is where Cornell is seeing this aligned with their goals. We've housed over 7 Cornell-employed families in housing fund-assisted units, and the largest award made to date is to a project which plans to construct 15 owner-occupied housing units that are going to initially be marketed to Cornell employees. These units are also helping house many of the workers that both Cornell and all of us rely upon, teachers, nurses, librarians, long-term care workers, and other various staff that we all need within the community. It's also helping in terms of sustainability because we've seen a lot of people commuting long distances, living outside of the county in order to find affordable housing, so this is helping to Cornell to meet some of its greenhouse gas emission reduction goals. In terms of the City of Ithaca, this program aligns with its goals in terms of its new comprehensive plan, which is still in the draft stage. The Comprehensive Plan Committee identified developing affordable housing as one of the top 5 issues that needed the most attention in the comprehensive plan. And over 98% of their survey respondents ranked developing affordable housing as very important or important. So it's pretty high profile. In terms of the Ithaca Urban Renewal Agency, the 2014 to 2018 consolidated plan, I'll quote, they found the city's most significant housing problem by far is cost burden, and that the lack of supply is a primary barrier to affordability. So the housing fund within the city has supported 62 affordable units to date with an additional 55 units we believe will begin construction. And that's 82% of the new subsidized affordable housing units built in the city of Ithaca since the first housing fund project got started. All right. So bringing it a little closer to home, Tompkins County. Again, many of our goals align with those of our partners. Really, this program comes out of work that the county has done. The 2004 comprehensive plan identified the affordability of housing as a significant issue and recommended an affordable housing needs assessment be conducted. And so the information from that assessment was then used to develop the Tompkins County Housing Strategy. And one of the key strategies in the housing strategy was development of this housing fund. Excuse me. So in terms of the current draft of the comprehensive plan update, the housing principle states Tompkins County should be a place where housing is affordable, safe, and appealing. In terms of our housing strategy, the county housing strategy, that strategy identified the need to build 4,000 additional housing units over 10 years, with 54% of that needing to be affordable. Although we've been seeing housing construction basically on track there, the affordable units really have not. The market has not been supplying them. And so the housing fund has been an important factor in the construction of the affordable units that we do have. Also, in terms of the county's development focus strategy, additional points are awarded to applications for demonstrating how their projects advance that strategy. And 100% of the units built to date have been located within development focus areas. We're also aligning with the county's commitment to sustainability and reducing greenhouse gas emissions both, as I said before, trying to reduce the number of in-commuters forced to do so due to affordability issues, but also the fact that the units built to date have been using green building practices and materials that U.S. Department of Energy Housing Innovation Award I mentioned recognizes the best in innovation on the path to zero energy ready homes. And also, I think it's important in our county that we're demonstrating that sustainable, energy efficient home design is feasible and affordable housing in suburban, rural, and urban contexts. So outside of the city of Ithaca, within the county, we've funded 26 affordable units through this program, with an additional 64 units expected to begin construction shortly. And this represents all of the new subsidized affordable housing units built outside of the city since the housing fund projects began construction, with the exception of one, Poets Landing, over in Dryden, that began their development process prior to the program really getting up and running. So that brings us to the future of the housing fund. As I mentioned, we're in the last year. The current memorandum of understanding is set to expire in the spring. But we're seeing that the need remains, and in fact has grown a bit since the program began. And so trying to keep meeting that challenge, this has been an important tool. And so the Program Oversight Committee, the body that has representatives from all three partners, is recommending continuing the program at the same funding levels for an additional 6 years. And during that time, we expect, you know, some of the projects that currently have awards that have not yet begun construction to come along, and hopefully to build a number of new units and to help keep us in pace with the affordable housing needs of county residents and workers. So with that, I will conclude, and thank you very much for your time and attention, and if there are any questions I can help with. Thank you.
Thank you, Megan, and thanks for the colorful slides we've been looking at. Joe, she put you to shame. We'd be glad to take questions for Megan. Julie Kiefer.
Thank you. Megan, on the slide that referred to the Cornell interest, what is the plan in the upper right-hand corner?
That is for Greenways. It's an Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services project that recently, in this past year, received a housing fund award. It has not moved forward to construction yet, though.
Could you say where it is, please?
Yes, it's if you go up 79, up State Street, a little past Cornell. I believe it's Strawberry Hill Lane or Road in that area, just a little bit. Honest Lane, I'm sorry. Yeah, off of Honest Lane. And a little before you get to Pine Tree Road.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Other questions? Leslie?
Megan, if you can go back to, I don't know, maybe your third slide. The one, this one. No.
Mm-hmm.
That one. Housing Fund Awards Drawn. Can you tell me what that means?
Certainly. So when an applicant receives, when their application is awarded funds, they don't receive the money right away. They have to actually supply us with a building permit before we release those funds. And so they have 2 years to do that. And so we have awards out there right now where, in a lot of cases, they're using our award to try to help leverage other funding. And so they have not proceeded to the building permit stage yet and actually drawn the money. So, like, just in the last week, we had the Stone Quarry Apartments had received an award, and they just received their building permits. So,
may I ask a follow-up?
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, can you tell me, because I interpret that a little differently, thank you for that, how much has been awarded, let's say, for the last couple of years?
You bet. So the total awarded funds would be $2,135,000.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I had a couple of questions. So 88 units, and so what would the average award be for those units?
So these include both rental and owners, owner-occupied housing, and so the maximum award for a rental unit is $20,000 and for owner-occupied is $30,000 per unit, and then an award is capped at $200,000 for a rental project and $300,000 for an owner-occupied. So the largest award that could be made would be $300,000. I'll say that some projects apply for just a certain number of units, so say three units at $30,000, so a $90,000 award. Others actually build far more units, but they've maxed out that $200,000 or $300,000 cap. So, for example, the Breckenridge building, I believe that's 55 units, but, of course, each of those units did not receive $20,000.
And those are grants as opposed to loans?
So right now the program has two components. The one that assists with pre-development costs is technically a 0% interest loan that is forgivable. It would come back if an applicant could not proceed to construction and obtain financing to repay that loan. But for the actual construction costs, those are grants. So.
And the other thing I was interested in was, and you mentioned it early in the presentation that we have a lot of in-commuters coming that need to find places, and yet I've heard some recent debate on should we be building these to house the people who are already here, or should we do the ones that are commuting in. I wonder, do we have any method of tracking who are actually occupying these units and where they are living initially and moving from?
Yeah, I'm not sure if in some cases we have kind of individuals building a unit versus affordable housing providers developing a larger project. So, but I can talk, especially I think some of the larger ones might have some information there. They are at least, tracking a little bit. Like they helped me, determine who are the employers, things like that, where people are working, what sort of sectors they're in. So I can inquire into that.
Be interesting, I think. Yeah. Brian?
Thanks. Just one quick question. I know you're asking us to continue our contribution to this fund, and that's going to be before us tonight. But the other two parties, what are you asking or have asked or whatever of them?
So what the Oversight Committee has requested is that each of the partners renew basically the original agreement for an additional 6 years, so the same amount. So it would be, $600,000 total for each, the city and the county, and then the $1.2 million from Cornell. So Cornell will be meeting later on in the fall, and so they're going to be discussing this. The city's been working. Their original funding source is not available, so they're working to secure, but I think there's a willingness here to try to overcome those challenges. So part of this resolution, you'll see, it's contingent upon the other parties also joining us. So the county isn't out there alone, but it's a kind of a good faith gesture in terms of if everyone else is willing to move forward, that the county is also.
Okay. So it's a bit like TCAB funding.
Julie Kiefer.
Where in our budget would this appear? Is it part of our capital budget? I don't think so.
I think it's off budget, Dooley. It doesn't appear in our budget. This is the reallocation, I believe, of CD loan payments. So it is not in our operating budget. No. You do it all, I think, through resolution, through what you're doing here.
There are program income funds from the Community Development Block Grant Awards the county has received, and some of those loans for the home ownership program, they come back as loans are repaid. That those funds have come back into the county, and so that's where the source of funding for this commitment.
So, who is responsible for the accounting of all this? Does Rick have to look at this?
Ed Marks will answer that.
Yeah, it is. Our finance department keeps track of all of this funding, but it has to be kept segregated and separate from all other county funds by federal and state rules for these grants.
So in the audit that we had, it would have been listed separately as federal funds, probably?
Rick?
The grants were grants that were received in the past, if I'm correct on that. So there's no new funding come into it now at this point in time. It's just reuse of funds that have already been used in the past. So it doesn't show up under the current list of grants.
Okay. I thank you, I guess. I have one other question, and that is, I know that, Ed, you had asked for, you had expressed the desirability of having another housing needs assessment. And I wondered if you could speak about that as part of this discussion.
Well, the housing needs assessment.
Ed Marks, our Commissioner of Planning.
Thank you, Mike. The updated housing needs assessment would help inform an update of our housing strategy that would give us a chance to look at all of the tools that we have available to us to support housing development, especially affordable housing development. We believe pretty strongly that this tool has been the most successful of those that were identified initially. Well, it has been, without question. And so it's probably the other tools we would need to look at to complement this. I would expect this would be a continuing part of any updated strategy.
Okay.
Well, I'm just wondering if there's a bigger need now than was identified in the early assessment for this kind of housing. We don't really know that other than just you get applications. Thank you.
I have Carol Chalk, then Leslyn McBean Clairborn.
Yeah, well, a bunch of what I wanted to ask was just covered in the answer to Dooley. Ed, can you also answer whether there's how much leeway we have in the spending of the fund that you mentioned, that we've, it's already been, it's payback money from prior CDBG grants, and how much leeway is there in what we spend it on?
We can only use it for CDBG eligible activities. So this is considered because it's assisting, has to be directed to assist low to moderate income households. And there's only certain activities that you can use those funds for. This was reviewed with the state before we committed originally and determined to be an eligible activity so that we were certain of that. But there are limits, pretty significant limits, as to what we could do with these funds. We tend to use them to supplement other home ownership grants, but we do have the ability to do both with the funding stream that we have coming in.
Thanks. Leslie.
Oh, man, I was feeling the mood lights. Dooley asked a question that was rolling in my head, and I'm not sure that I got a satisfactory answer. Where does this fund reside? Like, where's this money?
We have to maintain a separate account, non-interest-bearing account for these funds by federal law and regulation. So they are segregated in a separate account, bank account, actually, that funds are dispersed into when you get them and that you put your income back into and can draw from. So it is very much segregated from the regular county budget by requirements of the federal regulations.
I have a few follow-ups. And all of the transactions when there's drawdown or whatever the terminology is, you're saying goes through our finance department.
They do, and they also are approved by the legislature.
Right. And the finance department is who is responsible for the separate account?
That's correct.
Okay. I have a separate question that doesn't have to do with this. Thank you.
Okay.
That actually answers a little clearer for me what happens with it.
Very good.
Megan. The all of the housing projects listed that you mentioned were with they're not large developers, but established developers, so INHS and so on. Are there some that are individuals who have applied, want to build two units? Or
yes. Like, for instance, the Aurora Pocket Street neighborhood, when they were constructing that small project, but they wanted one of those houses to be affordable. And so applied and did receive an award and proceeded to construction. So there's one of those houses is an affordable unit with a household making $80,000, 80% or less of area median income in there. And that's restricted, you know, on the long-term basis that way. So if it's sold in the future, it will remain affordable.
So this fund is not restricted to only the larger developers, if you meet the guidelines of CDBG under its housing objective, mm-hmm. one can apply. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyone else? Megan, thank you very much tonight. We appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Does it,
yes, Carol?
Does it make sense while Megan or Ed are here to take this matter?
Happy to do that.
Yes? Is now the appropriate time, or are there other reports and things?
Let's just do the resolution. We'll come back to your report. We won't do your full report. Carol Chalk, do you want to move resolution F?
Okay. I can move it. Am I allowed to speak for it as well? Or I have to wait. Okay. I would like to move resolution F. Commitment of Tompkins County Income Funds for Continuation of Tompkins County Housing Fund.
There's a seconded by Leslin. Discussion. Carol?
Yeah. I just want to point out that where and how we live, it's the base from which we conduct the rest of our lives. So the importance of this program to everything else that our residents have to deal with in our lives, I don't think can be overstated. And then I just also want to point out that there's very little about, in my memory, and I have over 45 years of memory of the county, city, Cornell relationship. And I can't think of anything else in all those years that's felt as positive that we can work together, that's been win-win-win for the three partners, and where we look at it and say we've achieved something. So I hope people will pass this. It, as was pointed out in the presentation, I don't think that we can speak for our partners in terms of where they'll get the money. We recognize it's a little bit easier for us. Speaking for myself, I will say that I would encourage us to do something like this, regardless of whether we had partners or whether all three of those or whether we can find some other partners in the future would be a nice thing to do. But it's something that I'd like to see the county do, and I hope they'll join me.
Anyone else? Leslin?
Carol, I appreciate hearing that, although I wouldn't go out on a limb and say, regardless of whether we have partners, we will do this. You know, certainly, you know, those folks are out there. My question is, Megan, I heard what you said about the city and not getting its grant, that they were there before, and we don't know where Cornell is going to go. So what if the city is not able to meet this amount of money that it previously committed? Everybody's falling on hard times, I understand. And Cornell is not able to do as much. What does that mean for us?
Carol, you want to respond?
Well, I can answer it, and then if Ed and Megan feel like I haven't done a good enough job, I'll point you to in the resolution itself, there is wording somewhere that I'm not finding that makes this contingent upon our partners continuing. Why am I not finding that?
I saw that. I'm just asking, what if then? What does that mean? Does that mean it doesn't happen? Does that mean if they give a smaller amount, then we come back and do a smaller amount? I mean, what does that mean?
Ed, do you want to take that, or Megan? I see it refers to an MOU.
Right. If this doesn't proceed as proposed in the resolution, we'd have to come, if we propose something, some alternative to this, we'd have to come back to you with a fresh proposal.
That's why I like you, Ed. You just, you know, we're not talking about it now. We can come back if that happens.
If that happens, it's back to sort of square one.
Square one. Thank you.
Well, can I ask on that? So in line 40, it says a cumulative amount not to exceed $600,000 over 6 years. Would that enable us, if the partners should come back? I hate to even jinx this by
talking
about
it it's hard
like
times.
This, but if they did come back and say we can only do it at a lesser amount, it looks to me as though this resolution might leave us room to do it up to that amount. And while you're thinking about the answer, I will say that I do think that enabling and leveraging, the kind of leveraging figures that we saw tonight, is worthy of doing, even if the county were just doing it ourselves. So, I would hope that we would revisit if we didn't get all three partners. This resolution does require us to get all three partners, or I would assume the committee would have the choice of deciding whether to bring it back or not for another approach.
Well,
but it's putting people in affordable houses is worthy.
Let Ed respond.
Regardless of what happens, it will come back because we'll have to have a memorandum of understanding. It'll have to be approved again by the legislature. And so it's going to be here again regardless. And if we have to propose some other approach, I'm sure we'll try to be creative and come back with another approach if that's what's required. But we're hoping to be able to continue as proposed here.
If I could just mention that we have dedicated our community development block grant funds to housing for many, many years when we've been able to be successful in receiving those grants. This is a good way of using some of those funds, and it's creative, as the words you just used. And I'm sure that if this didn't hang together, we would still find a way to dedicate it to housing needs in Tompkins County. Jim?
Is the city's money CD money?
I'm sorry, is the city's
money? Is the city's money CD money or general fund money?
The money they used before was in a restricted fund for housing. It came from a specific source, not CD, not community development block grant. So, they are not able to do what we're doing directly.
Right. Okay.
With their,
but, I mean, who handles the $100K for them? Urban Renewal?
Or? Well, we work with the Urban Renewal Agency.
Okay. All right. I understand. Thank you.
All right. Are we ready to vote?
Yes, sir.
Okay. On the resolution, all those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Go back to item 7, Chair's Report and Chair's Appointments. Don't have the appointments tonight, but I'll mention a couple of things. Cornell University has a new president, elect, I should say. She'll be taking over in July. Her name is Elizabeth, I think she goes by Beth Garrett. I had the pleasure of being introduced to her when she came and visited our community last week. And I look forward to all of us having a chance to work with her and the community, and we wish her well. And I think it's kind of exciting that they have a new president during their 150th anniversary at the same time. Speaking of anniversaries, we're only a couple of years away from the bicentennial of the creation, the chartering of Tompkins County by the state legislature in 1817. And I think it would be fitting if we had a group dedicated to educating the people in Tompkins County about that. We have a proposal from our county historian, Carol Kamen, that we set up a bicentennial commission, that could be coming together and making recommendations to us about how it would be proper to celebrate that. And there are many ways that we can do that. We have been going through a education process for the 150th anniversary of the Civil War, as you know, with the Civil War Commission. That will be ending next year, and it will give us a couple of years to do this. So I plan to go ahead and charge a commission and work with the county historian as to who we think, what folks ought to be on that. We're looking for people who are interested in that. I already have one expression of interest, and I'm sure we'll have more. So I wanted to tell folks about that. Of course, it would require some money in the future, and how much that's going to be. I've been kind of proud that our Civil War Commission has been able to do as much as it has on a shoestring. But we'll have to see what they recommend and what they report in 2017. Happy to answer any questions. If none, then I'll move to the report from our county administrator, Joe Mariana.
And I have no report tonight.
That was quick. A report from our director of finance.
I have a fairly short report for you tonight. The first item I'd like to bring to your attention is that county administrator Joe Mariana and I had our Moody's rating interview yesterday. It went very well. As you know, we have a nearly $30 million bond issue that's going to be priced in 2 weeks. In that interview yesterday, we went through a number of topics that really highlights the county's activities over the last 5 years. Joe was even able to present part of a PowerPoint, which you know how impressive that can be, that outlined a little bit about what our revised capital projects plan looks like. But I think they took the comments that we made very favorably. And as you know, we were already at one of the highest ratings that Moody's can interest, at AA1, and we were striving to obtain that AAA rating. We did find out after all our exhaustive work and having a fine time with the phone interview that there are certain metrics and benchmarks that are locking the county into a certain strata of government that we just can't simply improve upon. And these are metrics such as population size, the wealth per citizen factor. As you know, in Tompkins County, you might think with a lot of highly paid professional people, that would be a fairly high number. But the student population, I believe you said it was over 30,000 students, tends to bring that wealth per capita figure down considerably. And those are things that we really don't have any ability to improve upon over time. The things that we have been able to improve upon, such as our fund balance as a percentage of general fund, those have been improving remarkably over the last 5 years. But it's in those areas where we can't make adjustments that we may have to be happy with our current rating. With all that said, we will be getting a rate report on Thursday morning, and I will be, after we read that and we ask questions of Moody's, I'll be sending to each of you a report that lets you know how we did with this recent Moody's report. It's very important to try each year to try to get our Moody's rating at the very highest levels possible, because it does have a dramatic impact on the interest rate that we pay on the bonds. And since this is such a large issue, nearly $20 million of refunding bonds, in which we're taking old bonds and refinancing them, and then nearly $9 or $10 million of new money bonds and bands, this was a time to really try to put our best foot forward and try to get this rating increase. So I will be letting you know after we get the final result sometime on Thursday. My email may not come out to you till Friday sometime. But we're always thinking positively, and I think they said that those counties that have our current rating in New York State With the AA1, we are one of just four counties that have that higher rating. So we are already in the upper strata as far as being able to get the best rate possible. So I was pretty proud of our presentation and think that we've done the best job as we possibly could, but time will tell. And then on to the most remarkable sales tax report, which I've given you in your red folders. These figures on the sales tax distribution summary are for the month of August. So we are at 8 months through the year, or two-thirds. And if you look at the second section that says county on this spreadsheet, these are the numbers that I'm referring to. The sales tax distributions for August for the county were 6.9% compared to August of 2013. So if you go to the third column in that middle section, you can see just for the month of August, we were up nearly 7% August compared to August 2013. If you move over to the right hand of the spreadsheet, you'll see that the year-to-date tax distributions for the county's portion totaled $21.5 million compared to $20.6 million in 2013. That's an increase of $804,676 year over year. As a percent increase, that's 3.9%. So that's a fairly good indicator of where we're at this point in time in the year. From a budget perspective, since we are two-thirds of the year, you would think that we would normally be about 66.7% of budget. But when you compare it to our actual budget, we're about 65.4% of budget. So we're off at this point in time by meeting budget by about 1%. Any questions?
Mike Sigler.
That's pretty dramatic, the increase in sales tax. Was that
just... Use your mic.
I'm sorry, Mike. That's pretty dramatic, the increase in sales tax. Was that driven by energy costs, or was it driven by something else? Or
I just think it's the economy overall has started very, very tepid and quite slow during January and February. And each month since then, March, April, May, June, July, August, has been a steady increase over the previous year. So it's a host of factors, and I don't really have any one particular thing to remark on why.
Any other questions? Rick, you're always welcome to come with good reports like that. Even
welcome.
Though you didn't get us the AAA.
We might.
County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
Thank you. As you saw, I just came in. I think I mentioned at the last board meeting that I had a case in Albany, which is always interesting. You drive there 3.5 hours, you wait around, you argue for 10 minutes, then you drive back 3.5 hours.
Can you point your mic at your...
Sure, and then you wait like 2-3 months to find out how it went. But in any event, that's why I wasn't here at the beginning of the meeting. I don't have a report, but I did want to make a comment on the article in the, I believe it was the Journal, but several articles about the company withdrawing from the Biggs project. As reported, the main issue was the wetlands delineation. The newspaper somehow attributed that to the litigation. As you recall, the court never made any determination on the merits in the litigation. They withdrew the petition before there was any determination on the merits. And, of course, the wetland delineation has nothing to do with the lawsuit. Other than that, I have no report.
Questions for John? Peter Stein.
When I read the stories, I wondered, how in the world is it that the developer never looked at the land to see whether it was swampy or not? How could this come as a surprise?
Well, they did do that. They had calculated that the wetlands would limit them by a certain amount, and then upon doing the more detailed delineation, it turned out to be a much greater extent than they thought. All in all, to be frank, it would have been much nicer if they did that to begin with, but they didn't. But, you know, delineating the exact extent of a wetland and generally realizing that there's a swamp there are different things.
So it isn't – I always sort of assumed that everything was all mapped as to where wetlands were and they weren't. That's not true, I guess.
It is in some cases. There are delineated wetlands which are mapped, but the maps aren't necessarily always accurate or that you necessarily have to go by those maps. And particularly in the town of Ithaca, there's been a history of the maps not being accurate.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, John. Do we have any resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? Not seeing any. We'll move on to the consent agenda. This is where we have resolutions that I'm going to read the titles of. If anyone wants that brought forward to discuss, just say to take it off. Out of the Government Operations Committee, we have ID 5127, Budget Adjustment, Board of Elections. And Resolution B, ID 5121, Tax Roll Correction, Lansing School District, Parcel Number 3-1-24. Out of Budget and Capital and Personnel Committee, Resolution C, ID 5088, Scheduling a Public Hearing on the 2015 Tompkins County Budget and the 2015-2019 Tompkins County Capital Program. Out of the Economic Development Committee, Resolution D, ID 5141, Designation of Tourism Promotion Agency for State Fiscal Year 2014 to 2015. Resolution E, ID 5091, Payment of Multi-Year Tourism Capital Grants, 2014. And that is the revised version that was accepted by the committee that you have in your red folders. Can I get a motion to approve the consent agenda? Will Burbank, seconded by Peter Stein. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. And at 6:35, we're done with our resolutions, and we can proceed to committee reports. And we start with the Government Operations Committee. Nathan Shinagawa is our chair.
Yes, the Government Operations Committee will be – oh, gosh, when did we have our last meeting? Did we have our last meeting? So I do have – yes, all right. So I just don't have resolutions. We have a number of items that are going to be taking place. First, what it is that we have the chair of the legislature, Mike Lane, asked us to look at our policy as it relates to apprenticeship programs. And so a letter was drafted by our county administrator in which I looked at, and we sent out to, I believe, 30 contractors and agencies and labor unions getting their feedback, and we're going to be spending a good deal of our time at the next Government Operations Committee actually hearing that feedback. We'll also try to get that feedback all put together and give it out to legislators beforehand that are on the committee. So that's one big thing that will probably be a very big agenda item. The second one is relates to living wage. As the budget comes to a close and the new year starts, the departments have more of a sense of what contracts will require – not require, but will come up that where this living wage issue may come up. And so Joe has a sense of that and will report that at the next Government Operations Committee meeting as well. Those are the two big things. Am I missing anything, committee members? It's hard when you don't have resolutions that are binding you, but this is those two items I think are going to make a very significant meeting, though we may not have any specific actions that come out of that immediately. All right.
Questions for Nate? Thank you, Nathan.
All right, thank you.
Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Carol Chalk.
Well, the committee met last on September 17th, so it's been a while. Thank you for passing along the resolution that we did. I'll just note on that one that in your packets on the left side, there's just a slight update of the report that you got that was in our packets that got mailed to us. on the Housing Fund collaboration. It just pulls out some that the committee had asked that the some of the information about the county specifically get pulled out into its own section. The content is the same. Because of the schedule that we meet on, I tend to report to you, it's 2 or 3 weeks after the committee meeting that I'm coming to report to you, and then we will meet again. When we meet in October, it will be the day after our next meeting. So that will be October 15th. This month it will be at 12:30. This is the committee that's changed time a lot within the third Wednesday. So that makes the deadline to get items to our agenda for that tomorrow, the end of tomorrow. We have a lively agenda coming up. We'll be hearing from Rob McKenzie. Dr. McKenzie, former chair of Cayuga Medical Center, had gotten in touch with Mike and about a report that he had worked on about medical impacts and health impacts of what's going on with one of our neighbors. And Mike had referred that to us, and so we have taken that, and we're going to be taking up some action and hearing directly from him. So that should be interesting. It'll happen at the very beginning of that meeting at 12:30, so people who are interested in the storage facilities that are proposed for the next lake over can come and hear about that. At our last meeting, in addition to the business you know about, we had an interesting presentation from Dwight Mengel about the Way to Go program. That's primarily a community education program that's a partnership between Cooperative Extension and Tompkins County to help people meet their transportation needs, and in particular with minimal environmental impact. So we had a very interesting presentation. People who want to know more can ask or see me. And then we had a lively discussion about the comprehensive plan. At that point, things move fast. At that point, we were really focusing on the principles and policies of the plan. If the comprehensive plan is an overall set of goals, things that we'd like to achieve over time in the county, the policies and principles of that plan set the tone for the plan itself. So that was an interesting discussion. And again, if people want me to go into more detail, I can.
Questions for Carol? Okay, let's move on. Brings it to me, the Charter Review Committee, and we did meet on Wednesday, and we had with us Jonathan Wood, who talked about the section of the Charter having to do with the Department of Law, and we also had Frank Krupa from the Tompkins County Health Department, who came in with some suggested changes, some of them prompted by changes in state law, that he wanted to suggest for us to consider in the language of the revised charter. And going through those was basically what we did. And our next meeting will be on November 5th, and we will talk about the Department of Finance and the Mental Health Department. Any questions I can answer? Back to me again for Old Library Committee, and we met on September 30th. We had a room full of visitors, and we had some privilege on the floor. Again, they're advocating for various proposals under the request for expressions of interest. We spent our time reviewing a draft outline that the Department of Planning, Ed Marks, had submitted to us as to what ought to go into the request for proposals. And we added and subtracted a little bit from that and charged the planning department with putting together a draft RFP. We will be meeting again on November 7th, at which time I think we will take action to approve the draft, which will be forwarded to this legislature, and to make a recommendation with respect to the four remaining RFPs. EI's responses to the request, or the responses for, I'm missing it again here, requests for expressions of interest. There, now I got it. I hope we never do that again.
Amen.
Mike, did you say?
Carol.
What date did you say and what time?
It'll be on November 7th, and I'm not sure of the time.
3 o'clock.
I think it's 3 p.m.
Yes.
Anything else? Let's go to budget, capital, and personnel committee. We know we've been talking budget here for a while, Jim.
Thank you, Mike.
What other news is there?
Let me begin with tomorrow evening at 7 p.m., Borg Warner Room, Tompkins County Public Library, budget forum. Strip Scampi is on the menu. Number two, October 21st, there is no Shrimp Scampi. Unless you want to bring your own. October 21st, we are voting on the tentative budget. We have voting meetings next week on the 14th and the 16th. We're closed on 10/13 Columbus Day, as it is on the calendar. OTRs, as I mentioned at the last review meeting, get your OTRs into Kevin McGuire. I've noticed in several emails that there's a form now that that Kevin has put out that legislators should fill out from their home computers or smartphones. And if you don't want to do that, please call him and tell him what you want to do from the OTR list or the list that you have in your own head that is not on the OTR list. But you need to get it to him by close of business on Thursday because he will not be there on Friday. And we will begin that process on the 14th at 5:30, again, right here. A couple of other comments. The Moody's thing, I didn't raise my hand during your comment. What I heard, and I hope I'm correct, that with our AA1 rating that we own now, that we're in pretty sensational shape compared with three or four other counties, maybe the same as us. And it would be very nice if we were bumped up a level, but I also heard that we may not have all the metrics to be bumped up to that level. But clearly, I'm sure that they were impressed virtually with our PowerPoint and all of that. So I'm glad that both of you were involved in that. The other thing is the sales tax. That's impressive, and I think we should all be somewhat happy about that, that things are moving in a way that will get us at the end of the year with what our budget projections were. So I'm pretty pleased with that. Other than that, I will take questions. On the 14th is the first voting meeting. Please be ready, and please get your things into Kevin McGuire as soon as you can. Thank you.
Questions? Carol?
It's not a question, but if it's refreshments you're looking for, the comprehensive plan meetings will have some light refreshments, so you can get them tomorrow at the library before you come,
yeah,
or
in
Enfield, or on the 14th before you to fortify ourselves at the Dryden Town Hall.
It's a feeble attempt at humor.
Okay. Let's go to Public Safety Committee. Brian Robinson is the chair.
Thanks, Mike. The Public Safety Committee has not met since the last meeting of this body. Because of a holiday next Monday, we were to move our meeting to Tuesday. However, due to the lack of business, that meeting has been canceled. Members of the committee will be getting the monthly sheriff's report sent to them electronically. And we will be looking to have our regular November monthly meeting, which also looks like it might fall on a holiday if Veterans Day is observed on Monday. So I can't tell you definitively when that one's going to be.
No, it's November 10th would be your public safety meeting. It's not a holiday. November 11th is the holiday.
On Tuesday?
Yes.
Okay. We will be looking at that meeting, amongst other business that I'm sure will come in, looking to have a presentation from our 911 center. As you know, that's been a point of emphasis over the last couple of years, and all indications are that things are coming around nicely in that section of the county, and specifically we'll be looking to speak with and hear from our new center manager and the quality assistance person with quite possibly an update as to what they see as far as their efforts towards accreditation. And with that, I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Questions? Thank you, Brian. Lessa McBean Claiborne is the chair of the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee.
Woohoo!
If I had your middle name, I'd say that one too.
I don't have a report from Workforce Diversity Committee since our last meeting, because we reported at the last legislature meeting. However, I do know that our reading and discussion group is in full swing. Thank you, Paula, for that. We're looking forward to hearing at the end how things went. I also do want to take a moment to say thank you to the staff of the 911 Center. WDIC many years ago developed a resource recruitment guide, and one of the things in that guide is we're looking for, we have positions and openings and we're looking to recruit, suggest, you know, getting out into the public and doing things a little differently and meeting with other department heads and agencies and sharing the information about the positions that are being offered. And I would say from my experience in my job at GIAC, it is the first time that someone has literally come and met with the staff to talk about a position. It's one thing to get a position description by email or something, but people have some questions often that they don't know how to formulate in writing. But when you have a body in front of you, you're able to get some of those questions asked. When Christina reached out to us and say, hey, I've got these positions, please, I need some assistance in recruitment, I referred her to the guide and said, look at that. See how useful it is to you, and if you still have questions, give us a call. Soon thereafter, she called and said, you know, John will come out and talk to folks and meet. You know, I have a number of places, and can we set up something at GIAC? And that happened. I know the staff was very thankful, and many of them who have older children were very quick to say, I know who's getting this application. I know who I'm going to have put an application for this because I think this is something he or she can do. So I really do want to commend them for actually taking the time to use that resource, which is excellent. It's used by other places, but I don't know how much we use it here, and WDIC put a lot of time and effort into developing it. As a matter of fact, we just did a revision or update of it. It is a working document, so I wanted to say that and say thank you to them for doing that. We are also in the process of trying to finalize a contract for the workplace climate survey. We're still working along that. We asked the company to, you know, bring back to us a more a smaller version of what they were proposing at first, and we're still working through that and hoping at some point to enter into conversations with perhaps the city of Ithaca and maybe other municipalities to see if there's interest
in partnering with us on something like that. So I just wanted to share that information. Hopefully pretty soon, I'm looking at Karen, we can get out to all of you our limited English language proficiency plan that was written up by Karen Beer, the director of our Office of Human Rights, something that came out of WDIC. So we hope to get it to you soon so that we can have the legislature officially adopt that plan. So that's my report.
Questions for Leslin? Thank you, Leslin. Good report. We go to Peter Stein, Health and Human Services Committee.
Yeah, I was all prepared to make my usual boring report on the first legislature meeting, namely that we haven't met at HHS since the last meeting, and our next meeting will be a week from today at 3 o'clock. But until my sharp-eyed colleague to my left pointed out to me that that day is the is Armistice Day or whatever it's called, Veterans Day, right? November 11th, right? So anyway, so we're going to have to change that. That hadn't caught my eye. I think we don't have the luxury of not having a meeting. Our meetings are always packed, so I assume that the ladies there will figure out a way that we can find out what day
Peter,
we ought to have
Peter,
that meeting.
I'm hearing that perhaps you meet next week?
Yeah.
Not November.
Not November. So you're going to be meeting in October next.
But the November meeting is scheduled for Veterans Day.
That's correct.
Oh, right. Oh, but next week is, I'm sorry, forget the whole thing, okay? Yes. I'm half asleep. I'm really sorry about that. My sharp-eyed colleague to my left did me bad, okay? But anyway, our next meeting, here it is, my boring report. I have nothing to report. We haven't met since the last meeting, but our next meeting will be a week from today on Tuesday at the usual time in the usual place. Thank you.
And bring your calendars.
Peter, what? That
See, Peter. Bring your calendar.
Well, that was scintillating. We appreciate it.
Stuck with your boring report instead of listening to your sharp-eyed colleague.
We'll go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Dave McKenna is our vice chair.
F&I has not met since our last meeting. We will meet again on October 20th at 10:30 a.m.
Questions? You guys are easy tonight.
Well, I have a question. Do you know what will be on the agenda by any chance yet?
No. We'll go to Economic Development Committee. Will Burbank, chair.
Thank you, Mike. Given the brevity of the other reports, it's tempting to follow suit, but I will walk you through. We met yesterday, and we did several different things. We started with a really, really interesting report on downtown development. As you may be aware, a lot of things happening, and some things have been happening a little more slowly than people might have liked, specifically the commons. I'll get to that in a moment. But if you haven't been downtown recently, there was a new building that popped up literally almost overnight. It's not done, but it is going great guns. It's the Cuga Green project. They're using a very innovative construction technique that allows them to literally put a building, a skyscraper, up in weeks. Cultivar is moving along. This, of course, is TC3's very, very innovative mixture of teaching food service and ultimately operating a cafe and event space. Students, they're a little bit behind, but the students should be in at the end of October. The restaurant and wine will be expected to open in November. The incubator space has opened. A couple weeks ago, they had an opening ceremony. As you may or may not aware, this is where the old building where the Mayor's Smoke Shop used to be. And there we could be adding five stories onto this building. So it's including a second story for the incubator. So it'll be quite something. Kind of across street down the street will be the Marriott Hotel, which they're expecting to break ground any old day. They don't know quite why, but everything seems to be in place for that. Number of other projects. Of course, the biggest one that you probably are aware of is the Commons. That is behind, and this played out with a number of merchants showing up at Common Council last week to express real frustration. They are have really been feeling the effects of prolonged construction, and they're it's not clear what can do. They're several months behind. They're hoping what we were told that to have the east end of the Commons and Bank Alley open for business by the end of the year, and the rest sometime after. But many of the merchants were asking for help. You know, and they some may be approaching our assessment office to see if there's any way that some of their valuations can be at least temporarily eased. And so they will be talking with Jay. There was a call for possibly rethinking the parking situation, which, as you know, the city is becoming very aggressive in terms of parking enforcement, trying to increase revenue, but that, unfortunately, is hurting downtown business. It's yet one furthermore. So a lot to be said on that. Hopefully, when all the dust settles, it's going to be a beautiful new space, but right now, things are kind of tough. Then we moved on to another area, which has to do with something that I spoke with you guys, you folks, a while back, and that's the increasing use of online informal bed and breakfasts. There's several companies, though one of the most best known is Airbnb, where you can basically rent out a room for a night or a week or, you know, many weeks over the course of the year. And this is just going gangbusters in terms of usage. But unfortunately, it's putting some of our local B&B, sort of main line above board B&B operators at a competitive disadvantage, because the online folks, people are basically, many of them, not paying the room tax or maybe other taxes. Whereas if you're running a sort of a completely well-established B&B, you're paying everything and you're contributing to the room tax fund. We were told that we really don't know the extent of the situation, but from everything we see, it's continuing to grow. It is now something on the equivalent of about a 60-room hotel in terms of economic impact. And that's mostly class taxes that are not being collected. The county has been trying to do something, and the approach has just been sort of a soft approach, trying to make people aware that we do have a room tax, and this is what you should do, and this is how you apply. And perhaps if Rick wants to add any more to that, I don't know if we have gotten much response to our soft approach, but at some point we may want to consider something a little more assertive. Rick, did you want to say anything about that?
Well, I know that we're working with those in planning department to come up with a brochure and a flyer and try to be a little bit more informative in getting the information out. So I know there is a campaign that's ramping up, which is going to involve a lot of staff work to get that word out. But you're right. It is a big negative that we have to, if not cure, at least we have to make some sensible type of recovery. We have to be able to do better in those collections. So I'm hoping that this campaign, as it goes out there, will have some fairly positive effect.
And of course, this is something that's not just a local problem. This is literally happening all over the country. These ways of selling space, in many ways, is a very positive thing. It allows people to make good use of space that they aren't. It's part of the larger, what's called the sharing economy. But it is not in sync with our older model, and so we are losing out in certain ways. So we have to figure that out. Finally, we had a discussion. Martha Armstrong from TCAD led a discussion to get the committee to think about the implications of what we wanted as a goal for economic development in terms of jobs. And they're in the process of coming together with their economic development strategy. And there was language in the draft, which was to create an inclusive prosperity with meaningful quality employment opportunities for the diverse local workforce. That's the draft language. And I have to tell you, at the board level, there's been some concern about anything that would attempt to attach a value to a particular kind of employment. Quality was the, I believe, the word that some people were worried about. They didn't want to be locked into that and how that might connect to the county's initiatives in terms of living wage. So we had a discussion. We didn't come up with any consensus or conclusion other than it's a work in progress. I would encourage any of you that are interested, though, to contact me. We can get you that whole document. There are other parts to the economic strategy that TCAD is developing, and of course that relates to our attempts to do to update our own county comprehensive plan, which will have an economic component. At any rate, our next meeting is coming up on November 3rd. As usual, we'll be meeting in the old jail conference room. We'd love for you to come, and at our next meeting of the legislature, I'll tell you a little bit about our agenda. Are there any questions?
Peter Stein, then Carol Chalk.
I got a question probably directed to Jonathan, but let me ask it to you. Irene and I stayed in Airbnb about a month or two ago, and there was tax. We paid tax on that. And why is it that, you know, all of the retailers on the web these days pay local taxes? They used to not, but now they do. And I wonder how come Airbnb gets away with not paying taxes? It's obvious to me that Amazon and all those people, if they could get away with it, they wouldn't do it, but they do it. Anybody have any ideas to why it doesn't happen for Airbnb?
Our budget committee has its hand.
It's pretty simple. The fact that, you know, we don't have anybody at our level, we would have to have a whole department of chasing down Airbnb people to make sure they paid their sales tax, because there's no pass or their room tax and or sales tax. There's no possible way, unless you're able to access their, you know, what they're doing, their personal email, and a whole bunch of things. We're just not set up to do that. I send you to a magazine article. New York Magazine last week had a wonderful story about Airbnb in New York City and Brooklyn, Manhattan, Brooklyn, all around the five boroughs, and the problems of, hey, guess what's happening? They're renting out my room, and they're giving somebody a key to my building. Okay, so there are all kinds of things going on in New York City that are frightening almost. And, you know, it's almost an impossible thing to do, except if you're going to commit resources at the government level to go out and chase people down for that.
And I might just add, I think, as Jim says, it's happening all over. I mean, I went abroad this summer, and we used Airbnb, and a wonderful experience. But there are real problems in terms of the regulation. And what we learned yesterday at the committee was that the site, a year ago when we first looked into this, there was a college student was able to go on the site, basically identify the addresses through some clues embedded in the listing, and figure out who was listing. And they have since changed that, so that's become very, very hard to do. The answer is that ultimately probably we're going to have action at the state level or something or even federal, because it is a problem all over. Now, Jonathan, did you want to add anything? Or?
No, I mean, both of you are right. I mean, sales tax is a state tax and enforced by the state. The room tax is enforced by the county. And also the law is somewhat more complicated in terms of when an entity or a B&B is covered. You know, so if you do it just like one weekend, it's not. But if it's a regular thing.
John, use your mic, please.
Oh, yeah, so if you do it like one weekend, it's not covered, but if you do it regularly, it is. And it's very hard to get into the details of each one, whereas sales tax covers everything.
So both the difference between the county enforcement and the state, plus the very simpleness of the state tax law versus the much more complicated application of the hotel tax.
Okay, thank you.
Carol?
Yeah, I also wanted to just bring up the Airbnb. I just think we would have to be careful here. It's a public body. I forget the language that you used, Will, in this recent discussion, but I think the jury is still out. You used the word above board, the more above board, and I think the jury is still out. In fact, I'm not sure the cases have even been brought yet as to whether this way of doing business is below board or above board. There's a lot of discussion about it. Susan Arbetter had an interesting discussion within the last 2 weeks. People could go back and find it with people from New York City, and it also became clear that the issues that they have in big cities as opposed to communities like ours are very different because of the ways in which housing is provided and in which people are in houses. So if you have an apartment lease, has its own terms that a homeowner, freestanding homeowner, has more control over their own local property. And then even owner-occupied housing in big cities tended to be owned in condo associations or homeowners associations, which have their own strictures that, again, if we want as a community to write some strictures about what people can do with their own houses, we can look at that, but at this point, it's not been clear from the discussions I've heard. And I followed this issue really closely because of my days on the tourism board and because people have come to me about it. And then when this issue first came to us at the Economic Development Committee and STPB, I happened to be at that meeting, and there was a long discussion about, well, should we assume that people aren't willing to pay the occupancy tax, and decided to try a system of collecting that tax. And in the first few months, the people that they contacted, the report back was that there was 100% compliance rate, that when those who were renting their houses enough nights per year were contacted, they said, oh, do I owe that? Now, I don't know whether any systematic attempt has—and they paid it. So I don't know whether any systematic attempt has been made to collect sales tax in a similar way. And there are issues having to do with, for people staying there with, what safety codes are being followed if you go to a hotel. So there are all kinds of complicated legal and economic issues.
Well, we look forward to
I just
to
think
what
that we need to be careful here. So if
reporting
Jonathan,
on this further.
Yeah. So if you know of specific decisions about this, it would be interesting to bring them back to us.
Thank you, Karen. Will?
And I would just say I was struggling for the right word. Above board did not quite do it. And once again, this is not just the Airbnb. It's like an entire kind of emerging form of our economic system, that people using their private cars and basically functioning as taxis outside of the regulatory system. So it's a work in progress, and hopefully we'll get there. That concludes my report, unless there are any other questions.
Thank you, Will.
Okay.
Let's take the minutes of September 16th. Who wants to move those? Peter Stein, is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion? All those in favor?
Wait, can I ask a question?
Julie, I'm sorry.
Oh.
Go ahead.
On packet page 28, first paragraph, which purports to say what I stated for the record, it's not really accurate. I consulted with Kathy Covert and sent her what I think is an accurate summary of what I said, and I would, I guess, move to amend packet page 28 with what is in your red packets.
Is there a second for the amendment?
Yes.
Will Burbank. Discussion on the amendment. All those in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand. Carol, you want to speak?
If it's passing, I won't.
Those opposed? One opposed. With the minutes as amended, all those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? One opposed. Two opposed. Julie, you voted against?
Yes, because there's more stuff that I think should be in the minutes, but I can't correct
them.
All right,
them. You have two opposed.
I can only correct my stuff.
That's why I voted against them, because I knew you would. I didn't want you to be alone.
Any unfinished business? Not seeing any. I'll take a motion to adjourn. Leslin, seconded by Carol. All
taking
those in
it.
Favor? Opposed? We're adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Everybody brought
good meeting.